Hey, what's up, everybody? Time for the Fantasy Baseball Today podcast. Normally I say our names, but guys, I was thinking there is no chance that anybody is listening to this podcast for the first time or doesn't know who we are by now.
Like, it's probably pretty close to accurate.
If you don't know who was, just checking out iTunes one day, just seeing, you know, what's what.
Not in October, not 2 days before Halloween. If this were February, sure. But no. Scott, are you going to... Oh, I shouldn't have said your name. Guy in there, are you going to dress your kid up as anything fun for Halloween?
Yes. He is going to be Charlie Brown. As a lot of kids who... I mean, he has hair, but it doesn't look like he has hair because it's thin and blonde and not that grown in yet. So he's Charlie Brown.
So you got the yellow shirt with the squiggle?
With the squiggle, yeah.
Very good. Now, yeah. Is that a homemade squiggle, or is this a Charlie Brown outfit that you bought?
It's a Charlie Brown outfit, but I think it was purchased off Etsy, so I don't know if that kind of splits the difference there. It is homemade, just not in our home.
I think that's, I don't like the way you answered that question. The answer is no. It was not a homemade shirt. You did not squiggle it yourself. That's what I was getting at.
Well,
and don't take credit for other people's work.
Truth be told, I shouldn't take credit for any of it because I was basically told, hey, let's make him Charlie Brown. And I said, okay.
There you go.
That's how the conversation went.
I look forward to dressing up a future child of mine. Who knows when and who knows what it'll be, but it's going to be crazy. That'll be a fun day for me. Anyway. We have emails. I think we're only going to read one today. We'll save some more for next week. We're going to shorten the show a bit today. FantasyBaseball@CBSI.com. We'll talk about the World Series. Some notes from around baseball. Edwin Encarnacion having surgery for a sports hernia. Raul Mondesi on the World Series roster. Consistency. We talk about it a lot in fantasy baseball. Al's got some data on who was consistent, who wasn't consistent. And we'll try to talk about players we would have trouble ranking next year. Players were... how do we rank them? How do we project them?
Neck deep in ranking players right now. So,
whereas I'm more kind of ankle deep.
Yeah, I'm just dipping my toes in. And Scott, are you having trouble ranking players?
Oh, you kidding me?
Let him tell you.
I will. I look forward to hearing about it. Here's our email of the day. It's from Double H. This is Dear Cobb, Webb, and Lawson.
Ties.
Oh. Nice. Okay. Scott, do you know who Ty Webb is?
I do not, no.
Alright, that's Caddyshack, right?
Yeah.
Okay, I was like, that's not... How stupid am I? I just realized mid-thought how dumb I am. I'm like, that's not Fletch, is it? No, his name is Fletch in the movie Fletch.
Wow. Yeah, what was the line? Do you like to tie your ties, Ty?
I don't remember that scene. That was, is that him talking to Lacey Underall?
Lacey Underall.
Yeah. All right, here's the question. An emailer on the previous episode mentioned an incredibly close regular season finish. My league can top that. In my 12-team Roto League, we had a three-way tie for first place at season's end. I never thought I would have to use the tiebreaker in our rules. Most categories won. But I am wondering, going forward, whether you would favor the tiebreaker we used... Another tiebreaker, or simply call it a tie?
No, I like the tiebreaker.
Oh, now I understand why he gave us the tie greeting.
You were ahead of me on that one. That's awesome.
Yeah. All right, so wait. What is this tiebreaker here? Most categories won.
Categories, yeah. I like it.
Oh, in a Roto League. Okay, that makes sense.
Most categories won. What if nobody won any category?
Right.
I mean, at some point, I think you got to call it a tie, but that's a good tiebreaker. If you break it.
Break all the ties.
I had an interesting idea after I read this email earlier. What if you, as the commissioner, created a tiebreaker, but you didn't tell anyone? And then at the end of the season, if there was a tie, you say, okay, you all can, you know, two or three people, whatever, you can split the winnings, or we can go to the tiebreaker.
Well, this is behind door number two.
Exactly.
Oh, man.
That's horrible.
Well, the problem would be if you were one of the people tied.
That is true. That's true.
It'd have to be like a Clue thing, like the board game Clue, where it'd have to be in an envelope. secured somewhere safe.
Actually, I don't think that is a problem. If you, the commissioner, are one of the people tied and you're the only one who knows the tiebreaker, you say to the other person, do you want to use the tiebreaker or do you want to split the money?
Okay, I win.
What do you mean?
I was like, oh, I want to use the tiebreaker. Okay, I win.
Yeah. Okay, yeah, tiebreaker is who's the commissioner. Just something to think about. That could be fun. Let's talk baseball. 2-0 Royals on this Thursday, October 29th, and Game 3 going to New York. Is it over? What do you think?
No, it's not over. They won the two home games.
They did, and they should have lost Game 1.
Have to hold court.
That said, if I was a betting man...
Well, if you were a betting man, you wouldn't be getting very good odds on the Royals right now, I tell you that.
Well, no, but it's better than picking a loser, right?
Or maybe you would like the odds on the Mets.
See, this is why I'm not a better. I don't really know. What I'm saying is I think the Royals are going to win.
And I'm going to flip-flop here because I picked the Mets in 7, and that was based on the superior starting pitching. And their starting pitching hasn't been so superior with their first two guys.
Here are the odds to win the World Series from Vegas Insider. The Royals are 1-4, so you have to lay $4 to win 1. And the Mets are 3-1, so you lay $1 to win 3. So yeah, you can think about that. That's something for the opening line podcast. Any fantasy baseball major takeaways from the World Series, fellas? What do you think?
I don't know so much from the World Series. I guess if there's one, I mean, Cueto was much better last night, but, you know, still not dominant. So, you know, that just makes me more worried about his value with each start that he makes going into next year.
Didn't he have 3 swinging strikes the whole game? I'm not sure he was really that good.
Yeah, well, I mean, he kept the Mets in check. I mean, maybe the Mets lineup themselves deserve some of that credit, but it's hard to see how he held them to just the 2 hits because he didn't look particularly sharp, particularly after the first couple of innings.
Yeah, I'm not sure, because even his good starts for the Royals, going back to the regular season, the strikeouts were way down. I just think his stuff is not where we're used to seeing it, and it's a big concern heading into next year. I can't envision myself drafting him at the point I think he's going to go, which is top 24 at worst.
I think this is 10 out of 11 starts with 5 strikeouts or less for Cueto. So that's no good.
Nah.
Terrible.
Raul Mondesi made the World Series roster for the Royals, as Ben Zobrist might have to leave the team at some point if his wife gives birth. Probably not, but... maybe there were other reasons. Scott, I know that's something you wanted to talk about, Mondesi.
Well, just because he is such a big prospect, he's probably aside from the Phillies, J.P. Crawford, and a couple of the guys taken in the most recent draft by the Diamondbacks and the Rockies with the first 3 picks there, Mondesi's probably the top shortstop prospect, but he has been... It's mostly assessing the tools for him and hasn't really translated to the diamond yet. He hit .243 at AA this year with a .651 OPS. So
not good.
Yeah, he's only 20 years old, and the scouts really like him. So I'm not saying he's not going to have a future in the majors or in fantasy lineups, but this is clearly just a wacky postseason roster thing, and I don't think any kind of indication that he's going to be a significant contributor next season, even.
Well, I think the biggest storyline for me is my worst fantasy fears realized, and the Mets making this deep postseason run, and their starting pitchers throwing too many innings, and I don't like it. And I don't know. Okay, they keep talking about DeGrom being fatigued. He obviously wasn't great last night. He wasn't terrible. A lot of singles in that big inning. But Harvey seems like his velocity is going down a little bit. So DeGrom threw 178 and 2/3 last year. He's up to 216 this year. And it might be over 220. He might have another start. I hate it. I absolutely
hate
it.
So you're rooting for a royal sweep.
From a baseball perspective, hell no. I want to see seven. This could be a great series. From a fantasy perspective, absolutely. I hate it for the Mets pitchers. I really do.
Well, you know, it was really a fortunate thing for Harvey that they swept the NLCS because he was scheduled to start game five, so that saved him a start. I'm not as worried about this as you are, Adam. I feel like the Mets have actually done a pretty good job of managing these two. I mean, Harvey, first year back from Tommy John surgery, he's about 208 now, which isn't ideal, but it's not like he'd be the first pitcher to throw 200 innings in his first year back from Tommy John.
Oh, what if it's 215?
In neither case is it like Madison Bumgarner throwing 270 innings last season between the season and the playoffs.
Yeah.
You know, it's not this alarming number for any pitcher. And in DeGrom's case, he's not even 40 over last year's total yet. Usually when pitchers are breaking in, when teams are breaking in a pitcher, they usually like a 30 to 40 inning increase from one year to the next. So DeGrom's about on pace.
Well, he will be 40 over if he makes one more start.
Okay, well, that's about where he should be, is all I'm saying.
He'll be like 44-ish, something like
that. I actually think it's a good thing, because if they'd used a strict cutoff of 180 for Harvey next year, that's going to make it hard for him to get to 220 next year, which is what I consider an ace workload, and what I want to see him have. So I think I'm not discouraged by this. If they were up to 240, 250 innings, yeah, I could understand some concern, but I think in the 210, 215 range, that's not going to raise a red flag for me.
I'm a little concerned about Harvey. I'm not concerned about DeGrom. That just, as Scott was saying, it doesn't strike me as too big of an increase for him. But with Harvey coming off the Tommy John, with them having set the goal of 180 and then abandoning it, and then the Mets going this deep in the season, and as you said, with decreased velocity and not dominating stuff in game one, you know, I'm not freaking out, but I'm interested to see what he does in his next start, assuming there is one, and I think there will be. And I probably will downgrade Harvey a little bit on draft day because of the innings.
I think the Mets have done a good job handling them too. They have no choice. It's not like you can sit them at this point. What about Syndergaard? Syndergaard is 30 innings over right now with a start coming on Friday night. Same thing, no big deal. 30 innings over what he pitched last year.
Yeah, and I'm not too worried about him either.
He's still less than 200, right?
Way less. 163. Yeah. Actually, I might be wrong about that because...
Check the minor league numbers.
I don't think I added the minor league.
179 and 2/3 regular season.
Oh, then I'm way off. 179 and 2/3 plus another 13 innings is 192 and 2/3. All right, so he's already... Am I right about this?
He'll probably get right at 200.
And he threw 133 last year.
Yeah.
Ooh.
It's a big increase. It's a big increase, but at the same time, it's just not a total that should alarm people.
All right.
I'd have to admit, I didn't realize the increase was that big. That's a little worrisome.
Oh, freak out!
Oh, you guys. You guys just can't take a good thing.
Nope, we can't.
It's the same thing I was saying with Harvey. If Syndergaard was limited to 170 innings, then you couldn't consider him a fantasy ace next year, regardless of how well he performed, because you know he wasn't going to throw more than 200 again. It's not like every inning added onto the total is a negative.
Yeah, it's an unknown, is what it is.
Well, it's unknown anyway.
Did you think Jacob DeGrom?
It's not like when teams have played it super cautious with these young arms and okay, we're going to do exactly 30 and then you're cut off, no more.
Did you think Jacob DeGrom was
still the same?
Did you think Jacob DeGrom was a fantasy ace this year?
Yes.
He threw 100.
Well, except for innings.
Yeah.
Innings kept him from being that.
Did they? I mean, he threw 191 innings. He was still amazing. 205 strikeouts.
He was amazing, but there were times when look, winning the championship in the podcast league this year, DeGrom was my ace throughout the season, but I didn't start him in the championship game because I knew he wasn't going to, I knew there was a good chance he wouldn't even go six innings.
Well, you would have won even if you had started him, so.
DeGrom was finished ninth among starters in fantasy points, even with 191 innings. So I cannot call him anything other than an ace.
Ace. Look, if you want to say, you know, it's 40 innings over, whatever, that's not a big deal. But if you're talking about almost 70 innings over, forget about what that means for his innings total next year. That's something that
all right,
shouldn't
don't
happen.
Syndergaard, more for me.
Okay. Well, we'll have to consider it. Anything else, guys, from the World Series?
I mean, honestly.
Who throws a shoe?
No, it just seems like these guys got to grow up sometime, all right? 200 innings, a major league pitcher should be able to handle that.
He threw 133 last year. You know that's a lot. You know that's a huge increase.
It is a big increase, but I don't think it means anything.
Why? You just said like 5 minutes ago that organizations like to increase innings totals by 30 to 40. There's a reason for that.
Yeah, they like to, and I'm just not sure it means anything, and it's kind of, in this case, I kind of feel like, well, what's the number on the other end of that increase, whatever it happens to be, and this number is still low relative to all pitchers in baseball, so it's not freaking me out.
Look, I don't know either. I don't know that anybody really definitively knows how effective the innings limits are, but just the fact that, you know, there's some, you know, camp out there that puts stock in these, it worries me. For me, it elevates the risk level.
Okay, how about Edwin Encarnacion? So, we talked about Dozier last week. Guys, seasons end, and then you find out they were more injured than you even knew, and he had surgery for a sports hernia. And Encarnacion's been pretty banged up just last few years, and he's still been amazing. He was the number four first baseman in fantasy over the last 3 years. If you average it out, he's a top six hitter in both formats. But he's going to be 33 years old next year, so Encarnacion, will there be any hesitation for you guys drafting him next year?
Probably not. I mean, because it is a position where, there's still a lot of high-end talent. Maybe I'm a little more hesitant to pull the trigger there, but I don't know. Then again, I have a feeling by March, I'm not going to be so worried about this.
I think he's naturally going to go later, too, because of Votto and
Rizzo.
Rizzo, right. I mean, last year he was in the first round discussion. And he had basically the same year he did to earn that consideration, but just where he slots in my rankings and just because other players deserve to be ahead of him, we're talking more like a late second round or third rounder. So I don't think there's a lot I don't think there's a lot of reason for concern here either. Okay. I'm just going to be the eternal optimist today.
Good. Good. Well, maybe the Marlins and the Nationals with new managers are going to both make the playoffs next year, Scott.
Oh, I think the Nationals will. Absolutely.
Are there any fantasy implications here with Mattingly and Bud Black being hired? Mattingly for the Marlins, Bud Black for the Padres, for the Nationals.
I could see one potential one with the Nationals, and this is really speculative, but Bud Black, I haven't seen the data from this year, and obviously it was a partial season for Bud Black with the Padres, but last year he was the manager who used the most lineups in the NL and used players with the platoon advantage the highest percentage of the time. He's going to be replacing Matt Williams, who used the least number of lineups in 2014 and was sort of middle of the pack with platooning. So I have to wonder if maybe Denard Span, who hasn't put up good numbers against lefties when he's played the last couple of years, maybe that means he plays a little less.
I'm not sure he's going to be playing for the Nationals because he's a free agent.
Well, yeah.
So
that could be a non-issue.
And
you're right.
That data might have something to do with the personnel. I mean, the Nationals lineup was pretty much fixed.
Yeah, and the Padres, particularly 2 years ago, there's a lot of room to make those changes.
Seth Smiths and platoon type players. So that'll be interesting. I mean, I think it's a good thing for the Nationals, just because it sounds like Matt Williams didn't know how to keep a clubhouse together.
And reputedly, Bud Black, that's a strong suit for him.
Right. I mean, Bud Black is like a media darling as far as managers go. So, but I don't know really how that's going to translate to individual player numbers and if it really makes a difference in the fantasy value of certain players.
Yeah. This is an area where fantasy football and fantasy baseball are quite different. Ah, well, he's got a history of 3 top 5 tight ends in his last 6 coaching spots.
But as far as the Marlins go, I think it's going to be, it should be pretty much status quo there. The reassuring thing is that we know what the history is with Don Mattingly letting D. Gordon run. So that's good.
Yeah, but he's going to trade him.
Yeah. So, yeah, I don't think you have to worry about the Marlins not running as much.
Cool. Let's talk consistency, something that I value a lot in fantasy baseball until I saw that Rougned Odor was one of the most inconsistent players. Then I was like, maybe I don't value it as much as I thought. So, Al, you gave us some data on consistent players, inconsistent players. First of all, just give us the background. What are you looking for? How did this come together? And let's have a little discussion.
All right, yeah. So, well, how this came together, I did a couple of columns on hitters. Didn't address the pitchers during the regular season, but I pulled the data for them too. But I was just really interested, you know, and partly, Adam, because of you and some of the debates that you've, you know, stirred on this podcast, particularly in head-to-head leagues, and wondering what kind of impact does a streaky hitter have. And, you know, first you have to really know who the streaky hitters are, and they may seem obvious, but some of the results were surprising to me, like Odor. Some of them were not surprising at all. So I looked at the hitters' fantasy points per plate appearance ratio for each week of the season, and then I looked at how much they varied from week to week, standard deviation. What was the average weekly variation for a hitter week to week? And then for pitchers, I went start by start using game score as a measure for them.
Which is the Bill James metric, right?
Right, like, where the average is 50, typical is 50. As far as fantasy points per plate appearance, if you're averaging about half a point per plate appearance on average, you're about replacement level. It's maybe a little bit, that would be a little bit higher for first baseman and outfielders, maybe slightly lower for middle infielders, catchers. But if you're much below 0.5 fantasy points per plate appearance, you're probably not really helping a mixed league owner very much. A typical hitter will vary about one third of a fantasy point per plate appearance from week to week. So they might average, you know, 0.6, but they'd be just as likely to be, you know, around 0.95 one week and, you know, 0.25 another week. So that said, Rougned Odor was the most streaky hitter last year with an average with a standard deviation of 0.68 points per plate appearance week to week. So that's about double.
Time out. Does that include the beginning of the year when he was terrible?
I knew you were going to ask that. It does include that, but if you take those weeks out, it doesn't really help him.
Okay.
So even the good Rougned Odor was still really streaky. All over the place.
Okay, interesting.
Yeah. So, you know, some of the other names, actually the second streakiest was another Ranger, Delino DeShields. Jake Marisnyk, Lucas Duda. I don't think that's really a surprising name there. Justin Smoke, Ismani Grandal, Michael Franco, Todd Frazier. That's definitely no surprise. Edwin Encarnacion. And Encarnacion raises an interesting point because streaky isn't necessarily bad if you're starting from a very high average. So Encarnacion averaged almost 0.9 of a fantasy point per plate appearance. So he had a great, you know, distance between the highs and lows, but his highs were really high and his lows were okay.
Okay.
So, you know, those are some of the guys, but I also thought it was kind of interesting to find out who were the most consistent hitters. And the top three on the list were guys who averaged under 0.6 of a fantasy point per plate appearance. So they're not really, you know, high end options that, you know, you may, the consistency may not matter, but far and away the most consistent hitter last year was Nick Markakis. Like miles ahead of everybody else. But in terms of the hitters who averaged 0.6 points per plate appearance or higher, the most consistent hitter, and by a pretty good margin, was Ender Inciarte. Basically never had a bad week.
Yeah, well, I wonder if that's, you know, runs scored, steals, stuff like that.
Yep. In fact, I had a measure for bad weeks, number of weeks where they averaged under 0.4, and Inciarte only had one, and that was a week where he had one plate appearance, and then he went on the DL. So he virtually did not have a bad week. Jason Hayward was next on that list. And I don't know what just happened here because I just lost my data.
You know what these players have in common? Well, certainly in Ciarte and Markakis, and I'm double-checking Hayward, but yes, last year Hayward as well. They don't strike out much. They don't hit a lot of home runs.
Yeah, and well, as we go through the list, that it's a trend, but not, you know, without exceptions. Christian Yelich is next after Hayward. Cole Calhoun, Marcus Semien. Now, there's a case where, you know, it's not so great consistency, you know, quality consistency. Paul Goldschmidt now. 0.24 points per plate appearance standard deviation. Very, very small. And, you know, just not a lot of lows, but a lot of great highs. And then after him, Charlie Blackmon. That one was shocking to me.
Yeah.
Because I figured when he goes on the road, there'd be a lot of dips. But Blackmon was one of the most consistent hitters last year. But then the others kind of fit the mold that Scott was talking about. John Jaso, Ben Revere, Elvis Andrews, Starling Marte.
So what can we learn from this?
Well, I think, you know, in terms of now that I'm aware of this, first of all, it's 1 year. So that just speaks to week-to-week consistency. We don't know about the year-to-year consistency.
Now you have to study who's consistently consistent.
Right, exactly. But I think the fact that, you know, guys like Inciarte and Hayward and Yelich and Goldschmidt have done this over a full season, you know, with basically, you know, very few bad weeks at all. It tells you that at least they're capable of it. Whereas you wouldn't even expect that from Todd Frazier. So I probably, be a little more aggressive in drafting these guys next year. Inciarte is somebody who in a points league probably wouldn't have even really been on my radar. Mm-hmm. But I mean, you know, he's shown you that over a whole season. He can give you production you can use every single week.
I had another thought about Odor, and this might be something completely different to study, but I wondered if, okay, so he was the streakiest according to this measurement, even excluding the rough start to the season before he went down to the minors and got his act together. But would he have really felt like, oh man, this guy's driving me nuts with his inconsistency. If you were playing him every week, would you have really noticed that as his owner? And so what I guess in a points league, this is a points league specific discussion probably because that's what you used as the measurement. What would you consider a disaster week from one of your hitter? Probably less than 10 points, right?
Yeah, that's about right. Well, I figured
if they score double digits, you're generally content.
Right. And yeah, I was talking about the kind of the cutoff of, you know, 0.5, and I use 0.4 per plate appearances as a benchmark for a bad week. Well, 0.4 for a typical week, that would probably give you about 10 fantasy points. So okay. Yeah, I think 10 points or below, that's a bad week.
So he had 16 weeks after returning and scored double digits in 13 of the 16. Now there were a few like 13-point weeks in there.
Well, so it's like Encarnacion.
There was also 20-point weeks, which I think anyone would consider a good week.
Well, but like it's like what Al said about Evan Encarnacion, where he's inconsistent, but even his lows aren't that bad.
Yeah.
So he's just a really good
Odor's
player.
Probably in that same classification, though, you know, not quite to the extent
right.
Encarnacion is.
Yeah, Odor averaged 0.73 fantasy points per plate appearance. That's really good.
Yeah.
Like pretty much anything over 0.6, 0.65 is really good.
So no, I'm not going to be frustrated by Odor's inconsistencies. I also thought that Odor had platoon splits, like major platoon splits, and that could lead to it, but he doesn't. His slash line is very, very similar lefties versus and righties, which surprised me.
I think probably the streakiest hitter that would worry me in terms of, you know, draftability is Lucas Duda, because he averaged 0.68 points per plate appearance, which is for a first baseman just okay. So when he has a bad week, that's going to be a killer.
How about pitchers, Al? What did we find out with pitchers?
Yeah, all right. With pitchers, the most consistent pitcher, and I threw this out as a trivia question in the office, and Scott got it within like a minute less. Tyson Ross.
Yeah, I guess when I saw that, I was like, oh, yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah. You know, and it's, you know, 5 2/3 innings and 2 or 3 runs every time. But So that was, yeah, that was Ross. And the next closest was Zach Greinke. And the standard deviation in the game score for Ross was more than two runs less than for Greinke. That's huge. Mm. So basically, Ross was completely in a class by himself in terms of consistency. So you knew what you were getting. You didn't necessarily like it, but you knew what you were getting.
Hey, he was on that podcast league team of mine too, DeGrom and Ross. He was right in that range where I wasn't starting him every week, but I didn't feel bad about starting him if I had to.
Yeah, I look at this list, Tyson Ross, Zach Greinke, and then it's like garbage. Eddie Butler, Danny Duffy, Adam Morgan.
So you know he's going to be bad. You don't have to worry about it.
Jake Peavy, there's Garrett Cole is in there, James Shields. The pitchers to me like wouldn't matter as much because I feel like their performances, if they are an inconsistent pitcher for the most part, I feel like their performances are a little predictable. Like you could say, well, they're facing a bunch of righties in this game, or they're a home road guy, something like that, where hitters are much harder to predict. So
I feel like,
yeah, what do you think?
I feel like the high end pitchers, and first of all, just to clarify, did you account for two start weeks in this or two start weeks?
I did because this one I went to avoid that. I just did start to start consistency.
Okay, yeah, start to start. Okay. Yeah, I mean, the high end pitchers are going to be guys who get double digit strikeouts occasionally. They're going to pitch complete games occasionally, and that's going to throw off the consistency in a good way. So, you know, probably the other than Zach Greinke, the high, the most high-end pitcher on this list is Garrett Cole. And what was Garrett Cole's problem? He too often went 6 and 7 innings, while most aces would occasionally go more than that. So, yeah, I agree with what Adam's saying that, in a way, at least looking at it from this angle, the consistency actually works against pitchers.
Yeah, you know, this is, like you said, I'm a little bit more predictable, like with a lot of those hitters. You know, they weren't ones that necessarily struck you as really consistent or really streaky. And probably one of the bigger surprises to me was Jay Bruce was pretty much right in the middle of the range. He was normal.
Well,
and how many times have we talked about Jay Bruce as being a streaky hitter?
But he had a bad year. Like, he never did anything good. You know? But I will say that I was surprised Justin Upton wasn't on your list.
I can go back and see where he was. I think he was fairly close to normal.
So Upton and Bruce drive me crazy, but, you know, it's not like a week to week thing with Upton. It's two good months, two terrible months, one good month, one better than average month. Those kind of players they infuriate me.
I'm glad you made that point because I noticed Marcus Semien was on the most consistent list too. And he may have been measuring it week to week, but if you were measuring it month to month instead, or if we were measuring it in breaking it up into three sets of 2 months, it might get completely different results.
Yeah, I think week to week, in terms of thinking about drafting guys, is the most relevant one because, again, it's who can you count on to use every week without, you know, them like completely blowing you out in a points league matchup. Upton, by the way, was more consistent than average. So that's a surprise.
Yeah.
Just get back to the pitchers. So some of these are pretty easy to explain in terms of guys who were the streakiest. Felix Hernandez was one of the streakiest. Jeff Samardzija, Clay Buchholz, Chris Sale. So, you know, there's really no surprise there. You know, those were guys who all, you know, had some slumps and, there's not really a clear explanation, but you're not shocked to find out that they were streaky. But then there's other guys where it seems much more manageable. Chris Heston, Trevor Bauer, Colby Lewis. These seem like park factor guys. Mike Leake.
Right.
I'm just trying to think, or in some cases, you know, injury. Steven Strasburg was pretty inconsistent. So a lot of these can be explained, and they're not necessarily, you know, black marks against them for next year. But, you know, the fact that Irvin Santana was, you know, the third streakiest pitcher, that just confirms every bias that I have against him.
And Shane Green was number one.
Yeah, Green and Mike Montgomery were 1-2, and then Irvin Santana.
If Shane Green hadn't become so irrelevant, I think people probably would have been able to guess that Shane Green was number one, because it totally makes sense when you think back. Okay, so in conclusion, the low strikeout hitters who don't necessarily hit a lot of home runs might be a little undervalued in points leagues. You can put them in your lineup and feel good about them. How do we feel about that statement?
I think that's pretty good. Yeah, and I think if you're going to find a trend, I think that's one that's going to steer you right more often than not.
Cool. Well, as I said, we are doing a shorter show today. I apologize for that. Tomorrow. Next week we'll come back and how about we dedicate some time to players who are having trouble ranking. That'll be next week, and we'll read some emails at fantasybaseball@cbsi.com. For Al Melchior, Scott White, I'm Adam Azer. Happy Halloween, and we'll talk to you next week.